The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It is Tuesday, April 7th. We are plugging right along towards the draft, which shall not be stopped by the COVID-19 that circulates the world, the globe, and is a increasingly dangerous pandemic, but hopefully being slowed down by social distancing. I don't know why I'm talking about this. It feels hopeless on this Monday morning, but you know what makes me happy? We're recording on a Monday morning, Tuesday for you. You know what makes me happy? I get to talk to Danny Cannell about quarterback rankings. Danny, what's going on, buddy?
What's good, Will, man? How are you doing? You know, I was interesting because I heard you going into this like opening soliloquy about COVID-19. It almost feels like when we're talking sports, you almost have to give that disclaimer like there's a much bigger problem. But I have a feeling, I have a hunch that most of your listeners know that. Like, I don't feel like it has to be said, and yet you don't want to be accused of being insensitive, so you just say it anyway. Like, I've been in that position that you're in, so I know exactly what you're feeling.
We've actually gotten a couple people who wrote reviews. They're like, will you stop talking about what you're doing during Corona and just get to the sports? It's like, okay, I mean, sure. If like, I can ignore, you know, the fact that we're not allowed to leave our homes, buddy. I'm going a little crazy. You got kids. How are you hanging in there?
It's good. Like, there's a 50-50 chance you could see one or two of them, or you definitely, there's probably 80% chance you could hear them fighting while we're doing this recording right now. So, I mean, you know the drill. And I feel like I need to go back to the college days when you put a sock on the door, you know, like some, you need to put some sort of, I need to get an on air button, but I'm not that sophisticated. I don't have that type of technology. So maybe a sock on the door. We'll bring that back. Like, that means daddy's busy.
2 weeks ago, like right after we got quarantined, my wife was out shopping for groceries and I was doing HQ. I hit with Jenny Dell and somebody else. And my son came up and took a number two in my office bathroom and then proceeded to yell, "Daddy, I went poo poo. Daddy, I went poo poo," for the next 5 minutes while I was talking about the Dallas Cowboys on CBS Sports HQ. And the producer, I think it was Dane, was producing and heard Robbie in the background. I was like, "Tell Robbie to come on out." I was like, "No. No, stay where you are," because, you know, it's like a 6-year-old kid. He like wants to show me his poop. It's
as he should.
Yeah. So, it's we're hanging in there. Absolutely. At least you guys can in Florida can play golf, I think, though, right?
No, they're killing us. No beach and no golf. Like, those are the two things when initially this started to crop up. I was like, at least we live in Florida. We've got the beach. We can bike ride to the beach. Like, we're within a mile from the beach. And golf, our golf course is about a mile from here. So the first few days, that's exactly what we did almost every day. Like, that was, the morning was the beach. The afternoon was golf. So we're like, this will be fine. Like, yeah, it'll be an adjustment, but we're good. Like, we can still entertain our kids. And then within 3 days, the beach was shut down. I'm talking cops at every parking entrance, like checking it out, like making sure nobody's out there. And then the golf course, same thing, about another 3 days went by. Then it was like, okay, it's going to be, cause I'm a member at a place. There's a resort as well. The first time that they dialed it back, it was like, oh, okay, it's just the resort people. The people at the hotel can't play golf. And we're like, oh, thank goodness, we'll be able to play. There'll be less people. And then, like, within 48 hours, shut down completely, no golf whatsoever. So, like, those two things out the window.
I wonder if that's a Broward thing, because my aunt and uncle, who, by the way, huge Florida State fans,
If you want to, dig it, by the way, so my uncle, we did a big family call last night. If you want to, Danny Cannell, former Florida State great. If you want to tell Pat Williams that the Gators suck, feel free to right now.
Oh yeah. Come on, Pat. The Gators suck. Like, I feel sorry for Pat because he probably couldn't get into Tallahassee. So he had to fall back school in Florida. So sorry about that. But I mean, obviously that's why he went to Florida. That's why anybody goes there.
But we picked up a new listener to the podcast last night on a Zoom call with the Williams family down in Florida. Jordan, who married my cousin, texted me. He was like, hey, what's your podcast? I want to subscribe. So Uncle Pat, nice. Thank you for spreading the word. Unfortunately, just got dunked on by Danny Cannell about the Gators and FSU. Hopefully we will have a rivalry that we can look forward to in the fall. Let's get to some draft quarterbacks. It's 11:15 on Monday morning, and we have derailed this podcast already. Good job by me. We're going to talk about Danny's top 10 quarterbacks and find out who is this year's Danny Cannell. Ooh, I like that idea. Offensive prospect rankings will be going on throughout the week. We're going to do running backs with Josh Edwards, wide receivers with Ryan Wilson, and tight end offensive line with the imprisoned Pete Prisco. He keeps telling us he's in prison. Pete, you're in a high-rise condo in downtown Fort Lauderdale overlooking a bunch of yachts, okay? You ain't in prison. Let's settle down, pal. Who is your number 10 quarterback, Danny?
All right, so 10-1. I'm going to go Mason Fine out of North Texas. Now, this one, and I feel like, and I don't know if you get this way when you start interviewing players, like when we're at the combine or when you're in different places, if you have them on the podcast. This one for me is a kid that I covered when he was at North Texas. I watched him play. He left the game with a broken thumb on his left hand, but came back in the fourth quarter, continued out the game. But even in doing the prep up to the game, he's having a phenomenal career at North Texas. He's a competitor. He fits like what offenses are doing now, which is, you know, it's a little bit more mobile, can make all the throws. But I love the competitive spirit about him, like a tough kid who I think could be one of those sixth or seventh round picks that's all of a sudden figuring out a way to make a team and possibly, if he's given the right situation, could make an impact. Because I think you're going to see more teams, Will, try out what the Saints have done with Taysom Hill. Like, it's a copycat league. Any way you can generate offense. We saw it with the Wildcat. Now if you put quarterbacks back there who come from the college game who can run a little bit, it makes it that much more dangerous. So I think there's going to be space for guys like Mason Fine, guys like Jalen Hurts, who I'm still going to get to, that are going to get drafted specifically not to be the starter, but to be a backup / wildcat quarterback option.
I think you're 100% right. These guys, these teams see what other teams do and they try to replicate it. And there are going to be a lot of teams, I think, that are going to try and also find the next Lamar Jackson. It's like, let's not do that. Cause there's not, like, Michael Vick was him left-handed 20 years ago and then Lamar Jackson showed up. So don't try and do it. Who's your number 9 quarterback? Cause I have a question after your number 8.
Steven Montez out of Colorado, big physical kid. It seems like he's been there forever, probably more of a project, not exactly the runner that you would like, but he has a massive arm. He's got a cannon, probably more of a project. Again, somebody in the sixth round, somewhere later in the draft, that you would be willing to sit on the bench behind somebody and maybe you get lucky and he turns into a starter, probably more of a backup throughout his career. But I still think he'll get drafted. Some team will give him an option to be on their roster.
Bonus, if you want to watch a film of Steven Montez, you get to watch Laviska Shenault, who
exactly.
If that dude stays healthy, he's going to be a monster and like a steal in the second round. Number Agreed. 8, you have James Morgan, who feels like he could be a Madden simulated name.
Yes, it could be. Now, this is another guy that I covered a bunch with CBS Sports Network. Because they let me stay local for travel. So I was down at FIU, saw him play a couple times, actually saw him play this last season up at at Marshall in West Virginia. But he's a player who's got a lot of playing time. He's won a lot of games, was actually recruited more than most players that would go to FIU. But went in there, took over the job, battled some injuries. But I do think I like his accuracy and what he brings to the table from a leadership perspective. Again, later round pick who I think will be a guy that will make an NFL roster, probably as a backup, but, you know, given the right circumstances, could find himself playing and maybe even playing himself into a longer career than most people think in the NFL.
Okay, so your next guy on the list is Jacob Eason at number 7. And I sort of want, I'm curious, based on my non, I'm not going to lie and tell you that I've watched 10
games. It's lower than most. Is that what you're going to say?
Well, you're a little bit lower on Eason, but I'm also wondering what's the gap between like Eason and Morgan? It feels like 8, 9, 10 might be like a, like another subset of guys, like a different subset of guys.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Okay. There's definitely, and I think there are, you know, and I like, I don't know how you'd like to, and I think we've done this before when we've done NFL quarterbacks. I do like to tier them because I do think there are different tiers of quarterbacks. And I would say that the 1, 2, 3 guys we went over are on a tier significantly lower than the next 1, 2, I'll say 3 or 4, like the next 3 or 4. Yeah. There's one guy we'll get to that I think is on the cusp between tiers. But for our purposes, we'll move up a tier that's a jump, which I would put Jacob Eason in.
Just to make it clear too, like I think Mason Fine, Steven Montez, and James Morgan, if I'm reading this correctly, are like, they are the, and lowest tier is not a bad thing. They're just in the lowest tier and they're guys who, like maybe there's a consensus top 7 and then these are your guys that you feel a little more comfortable with that you think will be drafted late that might have a little bit of a flyer shot to make it, right?
Yes. Like, I mean, I was thinking about Nate Stanley from Iowa. I don't know. I don't love his skill set. He's probably just outside, but there's probably an interchangeable group of guys who may or may not get drafted 6th, 7th or free agents. And I would put these guys in that category for sure.
Okay, so Jacob Eason at number 7. That is lower than the consensus. Why are you not down on him, but lower on him than maybe most people?
So I'm lower on him for the part, and one of the reasons I really wanted to do was keep Jake Fromm above Jacob Eason, because I do think, you know, we had those guys compete against each other. Jake Fromm beat him out when his coaching staff saw both of them right there together in Athens. And granted, you know, one can go another place and Jake Fromm can excel at Georgia, continue there. Eason has to take the long road to get where he is. And he did start to improve at Washington and had a pretty decent year. But I still think he's a raw potential guy. And one of the things that drives me nuts through this process, Will, is when you see guys that are okay on film, but then when they throw in their shorts and a t-shirt and they can, you know, sling it, and everybody's like, ooh, this guy's a project. Like, ooh, we like the raw potential here.
If you put Jacob Eason's arm on Jake Fromm's body, you would have a really, really good quarterback.
Oh, yeah, probably a top 3 pick, like without question. Like, it's absolutely. But that goes to my point. Like, you can't just fall in love with guys because of how they test or how far they throw a football. Like, all those skills are severely overrated when it comes to actually playing the franchise quarterback, being a franchise quarterback. Yes, they matter somewhat, but there's other things that matter more. Now, Jacob Eason could be a guy that, you know, and I think he'll probably get drafted 3rd or 4th round, so we're starting to move up in tiers as well, that may light it up. Maybe he gets in the right system and gets in and has a lot of success. But I'm not buying it until I see it. But as far as a risk reward, if it was the 4th round and I was in need of a quarterback to add depth to my depth chart, I would absolutely take a swing at Jacob Eason.
Yeah, and I think it would need to be a spot like, we mentioned New Orleans, how they have Taysom Hill as the backup, but like maybe Sean Payton loves Jacob Eason's physical skill set and thinks that he can develop him mentally. Dan Orlovsky was on the podcast last week and actually suggested that Jake Fromm would be a great fit for the Saints because he is a breeze type guy. But like, you know, I think the, and we'll get to Fromm in just a second, but I think the thing with Eason is he can't go somewhere where he's going to be asked to start 10 games.
No, that
would be a problem for a team.
It would absolutely be a problem. You know, what it reminds me a little bit of is Ryan Mallett, you know, a guy who came out college, the Patriots took him, you know, like he's got some talent and, you know, really raw potential, and then just didn't pan out for whatever. Now there's other examples you could give that would be a better example. And I'm sure Jacob Eason wouldn't love being compared to Ryan Mallett, but that's kind of where I view him as.
If you compared me to Ryan Mallett and I'm not physically built for anything related to quarterbacking, I would be insulted. Like it would be an upgrade physically to be Ryan Mallett. I would still be insulted. Like the guy got benched. Who did he get benched for? By Bill O'Brien. Got benched for Tom Savage because he slept through his alarm clock in Miami. Like, what are you doing?
I don't want to say character issues comparison. I mean raw potential comparison. Remember how much respect there was for Belichick and the fact that the Patriots drafted Ryan Mallett, that people were floating around trade offers that they should go get Ryan Mallett from the Patriots? Like, that was unbelievable to me, because I remember watching him coming out thinking, this kid's not that special. Like, he's got some significant issues as we get derailed once again, but that's all right.
But I mean, like, that, right? That's why it's a good comparison. Like, Ryan Mallett had this howitzer, and you would watch him throw, and you're like, God, if this guy could ever harness it, he's going to be incredible. It's like, well, maybe he won't harness it. Or maybe Zach Mettenberger. I guess Zach Mettenberger a little slower. Same deal, though.
It happens every single year. It happens every single year that it goes. And every single year we see players get overdrafted and they don't pan out. They end up, you know, in a few years, they're like, hey, what happened to that guy? Or like, oh, he was on a practice squad last year and he's no longer in the league. Like, it happens all the time.
Yeah, so remember that one long touchdown he threw in that time he got sacked 14 times? And okay, so the opposite of that is Jake Fromm, who I think we interviewed him at the Super Bowl. He did the Jake from State Farm thing. He is very, like, you talk about a guy who doesn't have character issues. That guy has high character. You can tell it. He's a really nice kid. Like, it is weird for me to be like, you meet some of these guys, like you meet Tua and you're like, he's a younger quarterback. He's a quarterback prospect. Jake Fromm feels like a kid. It's weird like that, but I can't help but think that he is going to succeed at minimum in a Colt McCoy fashion at the NFL level.
I agree. Like, I think he is. And Debo knows this because I remember talking about him, Kanellon Bell. Like, I fell in love with Jake Fromm when I watched QB1, the series on Netflix, and saw, like, because so many of those kids are punks when they're on that show. And you're like, oh, this is the worst kid ever. And he's 17, like, you know, just cocky and arrogant. And he was the same way as a senior in high school as he is now. So he's had a really good upbringing. Like, his parents did a fantastic job. He's kept a really level head and he's had success as a true freshman. So he's played really well. Now, unfortunately for Jake Fromm, he's coming off the worst year of his career. He had, you know, injuries in his offensive line. He had bad, you know, young wide receivers around him. So he didn't have a really good year, which is why we're not talking about him higher. Then he goes to the combine and his hand size is an issue. Top tier arm strength becomes an issue. But I would say he's going to be, you know, a 10-year player in the NFL. I don't think, and this is where Orlovsky and I think have disagreed, because I've talked to him too a lot about Jake Fromm, and he loves Jake Fromm even more than I do.
Yes.
I think he's probably going to be a 10-year guy that's going to be mostly a backup, maybe, and probably like Colt McCoy, like you were mentioning. Yeah. I just don't, and maybe there's a very slim window that he gets where he's handed the reins. Because whatever team he goes to, the starter's not getting it done or they get hurt, and he gets that opportunity, and I would love to see him take advantage of it, but I do think some of his deficiencies with the arm talent, top-tier arm talent, could get exposed, and that's why, and even still, maybe he gets that opportunity. I don't think he seizes it, though, you know, and that sounds harsh. I just don't think he's got the top-tier arm talent and just overall athleticism, some of the things that we're looking at for quarterbacks now, to take advantage of and be trusted with a franchise. Now, I think he'll make, you know, he could have an outstanding career, and I think he will. I think he could come in and win a few games for you, which is great. He can make a lot of money. I just don't think he'll ever be that franchise quarterback.
Well, this is exactly why we, and I mean that collectively, fall in love with the Jacob Eason's or the Ryan Mallett's of the world, because Jake Fromm, if you took his brain and dropped it in Jacob Eason's body and let Jacob Eason could process and operate an offense the way that Jake Fromm does, you'd have a potential Hall of Fame quarterback. But that's not how this works. I mean, like, you can't do that. And you can't gift somebody with physical skills. Like, it's just, it's just not going to happen. So if you can fall in love with the potential of a guy who has the physical skill set, it's harder to project Jake Fromm developing physically at the next level. Although that does happen in some cases. Guys' arms get stronger. That's why I think Dan Orlovsky put him on the Saints, because it's like, okay, there is a little bit of a breeze comp if he develops more physically, gets stronger when he gets to the NFL for whatever reason. But I'm with you. I think that he's probably a frisky backup.
Right. Totally. And he'll be great for a locker room, great for a quarterback room, good ear for the starting quarterback to bounce ideas off, all those things, which is great. Like, again, I think he'll have a really nice, long NFL career, which is a great thing. You know, it's not a bad, and I'm sure in his mind, he wants to go in and say, I can be a starter. You know, I was trying to think of, you know, fourth, because I, and this is where I lost out of bed at one point in the season. Man. What's that?
Colt McCoy is still getting paid. Like,
Exactly. Yeah. I just wonder at what point, because I don't think he's going to get drafted in the first two rounds. I think he's more of a third rounder, maybe more realistically a fourth rounder. But like Orlovsky totally disagrees with me. We had a bet at one time during the season he was going to be a first rounder, and then he backed off that. I think he still believes he's going second. I wonder if a team's going to be willing to invest a second round pick in a quarterback who I don't think anybody would say, yeah, that's our franchise. So that's the only thing to me for Fromm is where does he get drafted? I'm kind of all over the map on that one because all it takes is one team to fall in love with you. But I still think eventually when they look at all the, when they look at everything and they weigh it out, they're going to let him drop and say, yeah, we can probably get him another round later. You know what I mean? I don't see him going that high.
Like, so again, Orlovsky's point was like the Saints, and I get it. Like, it makes sense, like the Breeze Cobb or whatever, but like the Saints have the 88th pick in the second round. They have Taysom Hill. They have Drew Brees. They are playing for a championship this year. Like, they really believe they can win a Super Bowl. Are they going to spend the 88th overall pick on Jake Fromm, who's not going to help them in any fashion? Like, if Jake Fromm plays this year, you're already effed. So like,
right.
You know, like, do you really want to use that capital when a guy you could get there? I mean, you can get an 88 overall. You can get an impact rookie in 2020. So I'm with you. I think fourth round is more likely for Fromm. And one thing that people need to understand too about the draft is that if you go in the fourth round and like the fourth round of the seventh round at this point in the NFL are basically congruous. Like,
yeah.
If you go day three, it doesn't matter when you go. Like, if you're sixth round versus fourth round, it's the same thing. I mean, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. Now your odds, you know, if you're a first round, you're a lock to make the team. If you're a second rounder, you're a lock to make the team. If you're a third rounder, I'd probably put it like 90% to make the team, just like investment. Fourth round, I think it drops significantly, probably like 60% chance you make the team. Fifth round, it's probably 50-50. Sixth round, it's probably 30%. You know, like, there's definitely, I don't know the analytics on it, but there's definitely a correlation with where you are drafted and your odds of making the team. So I think there's a, you know, it drops off, of course, every time. But I think, like you're saying, I think the fourth through the seventh are pretty similar. Those odds start dropping, but you're by no means a lock to make the team as a fourth round pick.
No, you're right. The roster factor is a much bigger deal for making the team. People get hung up on like somebody drops to the sixth round. It's like, well, he was a fourth round prospect anyway. So like, don't like, that just means a team maybe didn't have any fourth, a team that liked him didn't have any fourth round picks, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Last guy before the break. Good job reading the break run down by me. Jalen Hurts is your number five prospect. I think the Hurts, Eason, Fromm grouping is very fascinating because one guy is the mental, you know, the smart, mental guy in Fromm. One guy is the physical guy in Eason. And then, Jalen Hurts is the two program leader who is a good runner and maybe a good thrower. I don't know what to make of Hurts.
I'm with you. And this is where I go back, and I probably put Jalen Hurts higher than Fromm and Eason, which I've seen other ones that have him below those two, because at some point, and this is where I have to go to the film and say, look at the career this guy had from the time he was a freshman at Bama and he was the SEC Offensive Player of the Year, to the way he handled his benching to Tua Tagovailoa, to the way he stayed around at Alabama, was a good teammate, was a good leader, the way he was called upon in the SEC championship game when Tua wasn't playing great, won that game, then what he did at Oklahoma. Like, he's excelled and had success every time he's been on the field. So whatever deficiency he might have as a passer, which I think are harder to find than people think, and I think it goes back to, well, if you watched him play when he was at Alabama, you know, they didn't ask him to do a whole lot. He looked a little bit, you know, like that the offense wasn't wide open. But then if you went and watched what he did at Oklahoma, the numbers weren't quite as much of a drop-off as I think I even expected. Like, I thought there was going to be a drop-off between Baker, Kyler, and then Hurts would be, you know, whoa, this offense looks different. There really wasn't. Now, they ran him more, and he made plays, but his passing statistics were still up there. When you watch film, he still made a lot of throws and a lot of big plays. So this one for me is kind of the opposite of the guy who impresses you because he's 6'5 and he can throw it 70 yards in the air. This Jalen Hurts impresses me because when he's on the field, he's found ways to win games. And I think that is valuable. Now, what I think is, I think this can be a good and a bad thing for Jalen Hurts. I think he is probably getting the most comparison to Lamar Jackson, which is really unfair to him because I don't think another Lamar Jackson exists. The way that he runs the football and the way that he throws the football, And yet, you know, in a copycat league, I could see an NFL team possibly getting fooled into thinking, oh, he can be our starter and we can run that type of offense. And if that's the position that Jalen Hurts is put in, I don't think he has success. But I do think he can have success if he's given the right offense to work with him.
Yeah, the one thing that I don't like about Hurts, just watching him, is that compared to Baker and Kyler, I thought that he would look to run rather than run when he needed to run. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. And that's a problem in the NFL, especially if you end up on a team that has like a questionable offensive line. Like, you are going to be forced into, and you're going to have to, like, you're going to be taking off running, and you need to either be big like Cam or fast like Lamar/RG3 to pull that off at the NFL level. And even, you know, RG3, obviously it didn't work forever. So that would be my concern, is like a quarterback who looks to run, to me, is going to struggle in the NFL unless they have a unique skill set to a unique like aspect of their running game. And I don't think he necessarily has that.
And I do think, though, and this is, again, I think this is, might be a knock against him, because Lincoln Riley, the head coach at Oklahoma, was calling a lot more of those runs. So does that mean he didn't trust them as much? Which I think it does. I think clearly he was calling a different game plan, which shows you some of the limitations he has as a passer.
That's a great point. I think Lincoln would prefer to pass it because he knows that passing is more efficient. But yep. And he had freaking CeeDee Lamb. Like, right. You're telling me he's like, why against Big 12 defenses? You're telling me you need to run with Jalen Hurts? Yeah, exactly. That's a great point, Danny. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will break out Danny's top four quarterbacks.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, at number four, I think that this guy, Jordan Love, falls in the big physical projection category, right?
He does. So I also think he's a little bit of the antithesis of Joe Burrow, because the way his career has unfolded. Like, if he would have come out last year when he was at Utah State and he had 32 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, you know, had a great year statistically, I think he could be a guy that was considered as one of the top three quarterbacks. And yet I think most people look at him and say he's the fourth guy. And it's, you know, there's a significant drop off, which I would agree. And it's because of this last season. Like, his film from this last season made a lot of bad decisions with the football. I think it was 17 touchdowns, 16 interceptions. Like, he threw a lot of picks, made a lot of bad decisions. But again, to where he's similar to Joe Burrow benefited because he had a new offensive coordinator in Joe Brady who comes in there and opens up the offense.
Sorry, 20 and 17, by the way, just for the record.
Oh, 20 and 17. 20 and 17. Still, I knew there was a lot of interceptions in there.
A terrible ratio.
Right. But so back to the Burrow comp, like, so Burrow gets the benefit of a new tweak in a passing game coordinator and Joe Brady, and the rest is history. Meanwhile, Jordan Love, the entire coaching staff left to Texas Tech, Matt Wells and the former crew. So he was working with an entirely new staff, entirely new offense, which I understand. Like, that is, to me, I think way too many people just think it's easy to pick up an offense, and it's not. It's hard. It's complicated. When there's continuity issues and you're trying to learn something, maybe you're trying to press and do too many things. So that to me is where he's kind of the opposite. And he's really having a hard time making up for that. But as you alluded to, I think he is the biggest, like, this, the Patrick Mahomes comp is the one that I think is unfair to him. Cause again, like Lamar Jackson, I don't know if another Patrick Mahomes exists. And yet Jordan Love somebody's going to say, well, man, he could be our guy because he can throw off platform and he throws off balance, which, you know, it's funny when we say those are good things that Patrick Mahomes can do. if you have any quarterback coach, they're trying to coach you out of doing those things. You know, like those are not really seen as good things. And yet because Mahomes has had success doing it, all of a sudden it is. So like you better make sure that those aren't bad habits that you're getting with Jordan Love. So he's one for me that's really an intriguing pick. Because I think some team will fall in love with him. I do think he'll probably go in the second round, unless maybe, and this is that how many quarterbacks get drafted in the first round? Is it four? Is it five? Somebody pulls a Lamar Jackson when they traded back in the first round to get him. I could see a scenario where maybe something like that unfolds, but I think he's definitely a second round pick. And I do think a team will fall in love with him because of those just raw skill set potential that you see. But I don't know. There's, you know, he had a run in with the law. I forget exactly what it was, but it was right before the bowl game. Yeah. I mean, that's just right. And that's not, you know, in today's society, it's not that big of a deal. It depends on where state you live in. But to me, it's just a simple IQ test, you know, like what are you thinking at this time in your life? You couldn't make a better decision than to just stay out of trouble. So that's a mild red flag for me. With Jordan Love. But again, I think some team will fall in love with him and say, well, that's not an issue. He had a new staff. We see what he did 2 years ago, so we're going to draft him.
Well, an interesting thought exercise, just very quickly, is what if you took Jordan Love and Joe Burrow and you flipped 18 and 19 for both of them? So, like, Burrow wins the title at 18 and is like, in 19 because Joe Brady leaves. And Jordan Love has – is 20-17 in 2018, but then goes 32-6 last year. I think we'd be talking about Jordan Love. Like, it would be like, you can't take Burrow over Tua. And it would be like, well, like Jordan Love needs to be a top 10 pick, right? I mean, like, that's just right. Sort of recency bias.
Absolutely. Oh, it's 100%. You know what else is crazy is Jake Fromm. If you look at his year, like,
if he come out of his freshman year, Fromm would have been a top 10 pick.
Absolutely. And this year was not that much different for Jake Fromm than Joe Burrow last year. Like, and that's how crazy it is. And that's how much of a bump. Like last year, if we were doing this exercise and Burrow, we probably would have had Burrow at 7 or 8. Not even. I don't even think he'd be in a top 10 quarterback after what he did at LSU two years ago. Like we would have said, he's a career backup. Like, you know, like he would, like it's crazy.
He was like 60-1 to win the Heisman. Like he was, I mean, just because he was a starter at a P5 program. Yeah, no. 100%. Yep. That's a great point. Okay, number three, Justin Herbert. He has all the I think the Herbert. Why do Oregon quarterbacks? All these Oregon quarterbacks just are quiet dudes. Like, what is the deal? Like Mariota, it's like, is he a leader? Herbert, like, is he a leader? Right. Does he have fire in his belly?
So I don't know if you talked to him at the combine.
I wasn't.
I did. What's that?
I didn't go to the combine, Danny.
Oh, well, at the Super Bowl. I keep thinking, like, where you guys were. You were at the Super Bowl. Did you get to – have you met him in person yet?
No, but I've watched carefully his interviews with Ryan Wilson because Wilson didn't like him as a prospect and then had to stand next to him for, like, 20 minutes. And I was like, he's such a nice guy.
So we had him, and I think Ryan was on the desk with me at Indianapolis. Yep. And I remember I asked him about the leadership stuff, and he had a really good answer. And I was impressed. I was expecting like a socially awkward, like we kind of weirdo. Like I was expecting issues.
Like doesn't look you in the eye or something like that. Like, yeah,
he was confident. He was prepared. He had good answers. He didn't throw anybody at Oregon under the bus. Didn't make any excuses and was like, I'm here to tackle this head on. I thought he had a really successful, you know, process leading up here. And I actually, when you look at him and you evaluate him, he played in an offense that was not suited to the NFL game, to evaluating film. It was a lot of bubble screens and a lot of one read and get the ball out. Like a lot of, it just was not a very complex offense that didn't really suit his skill set. I think to me, if I was picking, I would almost like, yeah, if you're the Bengals, they're out of the conversation because they have to take Joe Burrow. But if you're the Chargers, let's say, if I'm the Chargers, I'm saying please take Tua, Dolphin, Miami, please take Tua, because then it's easy. Then you don't have any decision making. And I think you could be really confident saying, because you kind of have an excuse. Well, those guys weren't available, so we took the guy the best available on the board. And I think when it's all said and done, if you give Herbert the right pieces and you give him the right coaching staff and you give him some weapons to work with, I think he could potentially have the best career of all of them. I think he's that talented. Now, he also is a guy that – you can fall in love with when you see him throw it. He flips it. It just effortlessly comes off. And when you see him run, like, oh, his 40 times faster than anybody thought. But those are the types of raw abilities that I do think are less tapped into than Tua and Burrow, because he hasn't had a sort of an NFL system to groom him the way that Joe Brady was able to have with Joe Burrow, and that the type of tutelage that Tua had at Alabama. So I do think he is the definition of a raw talent that can be groomed into being possibly the best one of these three quarterbacks.
That's another good thought exercise too. Like, what happens if you flip Tua and Justin Herbert? Is Justin Herbert great at Alabama and Tua's like a quiet guy who's not a big enough leader coming out of Oregon? Cause like, you could see that. I mean, like, Tua, totally. You know what I mean? Like, my thing, and maybe I'm not doing a good enough job separating Herbert from the offense, but I would watch I would stay up, cause I like to stay up late and gamble on college football. I would stay up late and watch these Oregon games. I'm like, I just don't, I don't see it. Like, he would make, like, he would, and may, again, maybe it's the offense, maybe it's the coaching. I just didn't, you would see some of these throws. You're like, what is he doing? Like, this guy is supposed to be a top 10 prospect.
You know what's a fun game to go back and watch is the Washington Oregon game, because Eason played really well.
That was a
and
midday,
Herbert played really well.
Midday in like,
yeah, it was a 3:30 ABC game, I think. And it was a fun game, and they both kind of, I thought they both showcased a lot of what they could do. But see, here's where I'm kind of tripping myself up. The games that I like to go watch are their worst games. Like, show me what they did at their worst. And let me see how they responded. Let me see if they were able to play their way out of it, because, you know, some of these schools that you get to, and this is really going to be a part of my evaluation of who we're getting next with Tua, is, and this was the circumstance I had at Florida State. You have so much talent around you that probably without question, 10 games out of 12, you're going to have a significant advantage playing quarterback, because just the talent around you is that much better. Like, all you have to do is just not screw it up. Like, you just can't wreck the car. And if you do that, you're going to play great. And then there are two games a year, typically at schools like Bama, like Clemson, like LSU, that you're going to be tested. And those are the games that I want to see you play against. And like that's the games that I want to see. And maybe you had two interceptions, but I want to see why, what happened in those interceptions? What mistakes did you make? And more importantly, how did you respond after them? And so that's one of those things that I look at where I kind of use as a separator. So I might have fooled myself into thinking, all right, well, I really put too much stock into Herbert against Washington because it was one of his better games. And yet, even on some of his bad games, I do think some of it was more offense deficiencies than it was, you know, he's not a good quarterback. Because I think the Auburn game is the game to go back and watch if you want to watch a rough game, because there were plays to be made against Auburn and it could have changed their season. And yep. He didn't make some of those plays. Now, the other thing is it's the first game of the year. Some guys, it takes a little bit to get into the flow of the season. And I think that might have been a problem for him as well.
Yeah, I'm with you. I want to know. I mean, like, I'm not a pessimist. I don't know what the word would be, but like, I want to know what you are at your worst. You know, it's like, totally. What's the meme? It's like, if you can't like me at like this, then how can, you know, like I need to see what your floor is to, like, I want to know what the absolute worst case scenario is for a guy I'm drafting.
Because it's the best evaluation of the NFL. Because the NFL, you're not going to have better talent. Even if you play in the Patriots, you're not going to have better talent 80% of the time. You're going to have equal talent 100% of the time. Like, it's just the way it works. Yes, I know there are some teams like Kansas City has some weapons for Mahomes, and there's some teams that have slightly better weapons, but the way the NFL is designed with salary cap, with the draft, it is more evenly balanced, so you're not going to have that advantage.
No, that's a great point. All right, the top two guys, obviously. Where do you fall on putting Herbert and Love, or like Herbert and Love together?
I think Burrow, Tua, and Herbert are in a tier by themselves, okay. And I think Love is kind of this – he's got one step in that tier and one step in the tier below him. He's like a tweener for me. He's right there. But I do think these three, I would feel much more confident selecting one of these top three than I would in Jordan Love.
So is Justin Herbert closer to Tua for you than he is Jordan Love?
Yes, without question. Okay.
All right, so it's really more of a big three for you. I would have a big two and then Herbert, but that's why tiers exist.
That's so
you
fair. Can do tiers.
What is your – would you give any thought to taking Tua over Burrow?
Not for one second. I really wouldn't. Like, I And even without injuries,
I don't know if that was a Tua question or a Burrow question.
What's that?
I don't know if that was a Tua question or a Burrow question, but
it's both. But even if Tua did not hurt his hip and didn't have that surgery, I don't, again, if you go back to the film and go watch both of them play, I think Burrow jumps off more as a more accurate passer. I think he's more athletic. I think he has more of the intangible leadership styles that you would want in your franchise quarterback and more of that ability to make the big play. And now it's not so much that Tua's, you know, awful, and yet that's what some Bama fans that'll listen to this will hear. But I just think it's a no-brainer. And then because of the hip, like for me, then it's like even more of a no-brainer that, okay, there's almost a one by himself. And then it's Tua and Herbert. Like, I know we're doing tiers because I think that's where they're going to go in the draft, that close together. But to me, I would not hesitate one bit if I was the Bengals to take Burrow. I would not give it much thought to taking Tua or any other team for that matter if you think about trading up.
Would you trade – if you were the Bengals, would you consider taking three first-round picks from the Dolphins for Tua, for Burrow?
You know, it was funny because I think Dalton is good enough to win with. I mean, he's proven it. He made the playoffs a boatload of times. And I think he's the ultimate definition of a quarterback who could be like Dak Prescott, right? Like if Dak Prescott, you give him Zeke, you give him Amari Cooper, you give him a good offensive line, all of a sudden he's putting up incredible numbers. Yep. And you know, the coach gets fired, not the quarterback gets benched. But you could be set for, you know, the next 12, 14, 15 years with Burrow. And it has been proven, I think, that the better philosophy is if you can win with a rookie quarterback and not pay him that much in the first 4 or 5 years, surround him with talent, than it is the other way, where if you're paying, and I know Andy Dalton's a pretty agreeable rate, like he's not that expensive when it comes to the bigger picture.
No, but you would want to have a quarterback on a rookie wage scale, like a Burrow at 22 million. I mean, Andy Dalton's still 20 million for 2020. Joe Burrow's right. 25 million for 4 years. Plus right. It's an option. I mean, yeah, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, so for that reason, I probably would pass on it, no matter what the offer was.
Okay.
And you know what? And going back to Tua, the reason Tua, if you go back and you look at some of his poor performances, they came against the better competition when he was getting pressured, whether it was the SEC championship game against Georgia from a couple years ago, whether it was Clemson in the national championship game. Like, when he played against the elite competition – it wasn't that great. And, you know, that was when some of the injuries started to crop up. So when he started to get hit more, he started to limp more. And he started to it's just the durability became that much more of an issue. And that was before the hip injury. If you watched his game tape from this past season, he really didn't have that bad of a game. He had one bad throw against LSU before the half. He threw a pick. But he really played pretty solid equally with Joe Burrow. But if you go back 2 years ago, which can be – now I could be talking around in circles there, because if you go back and put on Burrow's tape from 2 years ago, there was a lot of bad film. But to me, it was such a different offense that it's almost unfair to put Burrow in that category. Like it's almost an unfair evaluation of him to look at him in that offense because it was so different. It was just such a stark contrast. And if you look for a bad game, and this is one I asked Burrow about this, I'm like, what was your worst game? Because I can't find one. And he referenced the Ole Miss game, which I think they had 600 yards of total offense, put up 50 points, and he had two interceptions, which was his worst game. But they still like just beat him by 30. They beat the crap out of him, and he played great. Like if you watch,
the only game he had where they didn't put up numbers was Auburn, I think, right?
Right, right. Yeah. That was. And even still. Like, I still think he had 300 yards offense and, a couple touchdowns. Like, he didn't play awful.
All right. We'll get you out of here on this. Where does Burrow sort of rank in the pantheon of quarterback prospects for you? I mean, I don't want to do an Andrew Luck thing, but I mean, like, the last 5 or 6 years.
I think he's similar to Deshaun Watson, but I think he's final. Because I think Deshaun Watson should have gone number one. Like, even over Mahomes, based on college tape. Yes. Of where he should have absolutely went over Trubisky. But for whatever reason he played at Clemson, product of the system. And I think Burrow is actually getting the credit for what he accomplished on the field this year, which Deshaun Watson didn't. But I think that's kind of where I would put him as a prospect coming out. Somebody who had a lot of success. I think it translates from LSU to the next level. Like, I think that's probably the most recent. Like, I don't think he's Andrew Luck type talent, which is, you know, generational. I don't think it's Trevor Lawrence type talent, which I do think will be generational when he comes out next year. But I think it's really solid. And I, like, do we throw Jameis Winston in there? Like, you know, but I would say
Jameis was awesome. I mean, like, Jameis is a slam dunk first overall pick coming out of FSU outside of the off field issues. Like,
right. But I would think Burrow's tape is better than Jameis Winston's tape from his couple years at FSU.
I would say
so for that. So I would put him slightly above Jameis as a prospect because he's more athletic. He probably doesn't. And I don't. Jameis doesn't have a cannon. He takes a long windup. I think Burrow's release is better. Like, I think it's probably somewhere between Deshaun Watson and Jameis Winston as far as recency of first round quarterbacks where he kind of grades out.
And by the way, Jameis's freshman year tape is something like that dude came phenomenal. In annihilated people. But I will say I agree with you. Like, he has it's like an outfielder making a relay throw or making a throw, like there's a throw from like right field to home plate is like every like deep throw. He just has to wind up. He's like taking like a crow hop or something like that. So that's the problem with Jameis. I agree. Burrow seems to process things better. He seems to get the ball out quicker. And look, you need to, I think people gave Joe Brady a little too much credit for what LSU did. Like, he helped it a ton, but I mean, he didn't reinvent offense. I mean,
No.
All right. We have to end this podcast because we have to go do a 2-hour mock draft, which we're going to do every Monday. Thankfully, they didn't move the draft back, Danny.
That's thankfully good. Thank goodness we don't have anything to talk about. Quickly, the Danny Cannell Award. Do you know who it goes to?
Oh, no. Yeah. Sorry. I forgot the Danny Cannell Award.
This year, it's been in the past. I gave Debo a long list. Matt Barkley won the award. USC fans were pissed. They thought it was an insult. Actually, I think his career about the same as mine. Tyler Wilson, remember him out of Arkansas? I think he was a fourth round pick. Never really panned out. Who else did I give Debo? I gave him Brett Hundley from UCLA, another fourth round pick. Had a chance to start. Missed it.
Not a self-indulgent complimentary award. Is that?
No, but it's kind of like, I think it's interesting because I think these guys will probably have like okay careers and one day they'll be in broadcasting because they're good dudes. Based on our description of them, Jake Fromm is going to be this year's Danny Cannell. Like, he'll get drafted third or fourth round. I think he'll have a nice NFL career. He's a good kid, good for the locker room, all those types of things. And one day, who knows, you might be doing the Pick Six podcast with Jake Fromm.
I was going to say that as we were talking about Jake Fromm, and I agree. It is a complimentary award. It's just not self-indulgent. It's he's going to have a good career and then be a successful broadcaster. Like, that's what I was thinking, like, because you were like, Jake Fromm's going to have a 10-year NFL career. I almost said maybe 5 years and then he's in broadcasting. Because, you could see him being like, you know what? This isn't working out. I'm going to go work for ESPN and, like, Mark Sanchez. Although Mark Sanchez went to two AFC championship games.
Top five pick. Like, that's, you won't be a top five pick winning the Danny Cannell Award.
All right, I want to talk to you at some point about baseball and how it relates to quarterbacking as well, but we don't have time for that because we have to do a 2-hour mock draft. Check out Danny Cannell on CBS Sports HQ. Is it at Danny Cannell on Twitter? It's just at Danny Cannell.
Right? Got it. Yep.
Follow on Twitter. Thanks as always, buddy.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.